as some of the other chapters in the book discuss, the fact of the matter is we have a budget in real terms is double what it was about 15 years ago, and yet we our forces are about, in terms of equipment in particular, are about half of what we had before. And part of the problem, or the big part of the problem, is the fact that every new system that we set out to develop is far more complex and thus far more expensive and takes longer to get, you know, to get into the field. And so what we have, for all intents and purposes, is what I might call unilateral disarmament. You know, we have half the wings, half the divisions, and so forth that we had during the 80s at twice the cost. And, you know, there are more, there's more than just the equipment costs. We've got other problems with personnel and medical costs and so forth. But the equipment that we are developing, the new and more complex weapons, are a prime contributor to this. So we have a process that starts with development of what so-called requirements, what do we need in the future in the way of a weapon system that lays out more specifics, and a process that goes ahead and develops these systems, obviously with industrial participation, and then fields these systems and operates the systems. And my discussion is about this acquisition process, which has been in the forefront for reformers for, you know, 50 years, I suppose.
For a very long time, people have been talking about changing the system.
And changing the system, and we have changed it. But we have, you know, if we followed the rules and followed the very directives that we have in place, I think we wouldn't have a lot of these problems. But we don't. You know, there's no discipline.
And why? So why has it been so difficult to change this system?
Well, you know, it's, there's a, I guess, what one could call this insidious relationship between industry and the military and, of course, the Hill, that, you know, puts a premium on these developments. That as every new system that comes down the pike is far more complex and costly than its predecessor that it's replacing. And the process that we have, which, if followed, would put some of the brakes on this, just goes ahead and acquiesces in this. And okay, so that's sort of my theme. We have a process. If we followed it and disciplined it as the rules are set out, I think we could arrest some of this, but we don't follow it.
One of the things, and it's become a little bit my mantra of late, but we talk and talk and talk about changes, and I'm thinking, you know, we talk about modular development, doing things on a smaller basis so then we can do things much more effectively. We talk and talk and talk about that, and yet it doesn't seem to happen.
That's right.
This issue, been studied, all sorts of studies, they come up with similar kinds of ideas, and yet it seems very difficult to get those from the point of talking about them to the point where they actually happen. What is the disconnect here?
Well, you know, I've been part of these studies. God, I've been involved in many of them over the years. And we end up with the Pentagon's own regulations or directives that embody or, you know, take into account some of the results of these studies and how we should do business. And we just don't follow it. I mean, it's, you know, we get decision makers that come in from the outside, and you know, and I don't mean to criticize individuals, but these guys and gals sit in these positions of authority and are awed by the military, you know, and are awed by 3 and 4 stars coming in and telling them, this is what we need, we've gone through this process, we need all these goodies on this weapon, and they all nod, and we proceed. And, you know, future combat system for the Army is a classic case.
Yeah.
In 1983, you know, here we were embarking on this very complex program for the Army. And, you know, I sat in the meeting and everyone nodded, You know, there were only a few of us that said, you know, there's no way you can do this and do this on this schedule and do it for the cost that you're talking about. And but we went ahead. And within a year, the whole thing came apart. And look where we are now, after billions, literally billions. You know, where are we? We've scrapped the whole concept, you know. And here we have F-35 is another good example, or what was called a Joint Strike Fighter. Same process, you know, that everyone nodded and we launched off into the program. And within years, you know, we're having to back up and say, oh, but we underestimated this. We didn't see this coming down the pike. We didn't understand this technical issue. And so we've got a program now that, what, in 2001, 2002, yeah, we went into full-scale development. And where are we? We've backed up, cut a lot of test hours out of the program in order to save money a few years ago. And what, you know, just this year we're adding them all back because we realized we needed. But anyway, those are two classic programs.
One of the things you talk about are setting requirements at the front end, and
yes,
this is something that often gets doesn't get the attention that people don't pay attention to it because they want to get right to the so they're getting to the actual doing of stuff.
Absolutely.
Is how important is that in this whole process?
Well, that is the critical point when the service or the people that want to develop something, whether it's a user or the user that wants a new weapon system or needs something, when they start the process, what do we need? And then the next thing you know, all the communities see a new program coming down the pike, and they all want to hang their little goodie on it. And so the next thing you know, we get a bunch of requirements that are, for one thing, not needed because of the threat that you look forward to posing, and certainly are going to cost an arm and a leg. And so we don't pay attention, and we just let the process get started with a whole series of nice-to-haves that become very expensive and in some cases undoable. Unexecutable.
I can't let you get away because one of the great things about your piece is that you offer some suggestions for different ways of doing this.
Yes.
One is you call fly before buy a competitive prototype demonstration kind of approach.
Well, as a matter of fact, that's in the directives. You know, that's been highlighted, my God, for 40 or 50 years as the way we should do business. And we did that. When I first came up with the Pentagon, we did the F-16, F-17. We did the A-10, A-9. By building prototypes, testing them, choosing one, in case the F-16, F-17, we ended up building both of them. But those prototypes were actually close to what we were going to build in the end. In essence, you look at future programs that came later, like the F-22, F-23, people would say, we built prototypes there. Yeah, we built the aircraft and explored some new technologies, you know, like supersonic cruise, but neither of those programs had the most expensive and most complex and most risky parts of the program in the prototypes, and that was the avionics and fire control systems on these aircraft. So we chose one, and then we launched into development, and lo and behold, we ran into all kind of problems with the F-22, and most of which had to do with the fire control and the avionics systems, and sensor systems. So those were not true prototypes, because they didn't embody the system we intended to develop. And so we don't do that, though. I think in this recently, the Ash Carter, who is the acquisition executive mm-hmm. now, has decreed we're going to do that. Well, I'm waiting to see when and where we do it.
And so what is your hope?
And test them.
What is your hope that there'll be actual reform in this area?
Well, I think that when you look at where we are, and what's happened to us, the decision makers have got to realize we can't keep going down the same road. We've got to do business differently. And, you know, hope always springs eternal. And, you know, I don't know. I'm pessimistic, quite frankly. But, having watched, you know, this process and been part of it, you know, over the years. And, you know, so I have to share some of the blame, obviously, for where we are. But it seems like we would understand, you know, let's back away from where we've been and do it differently.
And I got to ask you, because you have been on the inside, why, and apparently weren't able to change this. What's the difficulty in making changes?
Well, you know, we have a process that is feeding, I guess, the technologists, industry, and so forth that everyone feels comfortable with right now because, you know, it's pejoratively that we're not interrupting the money flow. And so it's easy to sit back and, let's just continue. And we have, the turnover in leadership. Both on the civilian side and the military is part of the problem. You know, we guys come in and they're there for 2 to 4 years, and you know, it's easy to go along, to get along, which they do, and then they realize, my God, we got a problem. But you know, God, if I can get out of here before the chickens come home to roost, that syndrome is there, unfortunately, and then you've got, you know, what we call political engineering, whether these programs that are questionable, by the time you understand that you've got a big-time problem on your hand, program's locked in. And you've got these huge constituencies, industrial constituencies, and, of course, on the Hill, because we've spread the work all around the country. And so it's next to impossible to kill a program, though. There have been a couple that have been done away with over the last couple of years, but not many.